Sunday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, and we're at MERS World Headquarters. We're under a waterfall right now, I think, at 910 West Ottawa Street. The eaves trough is spilling water profusely right now. If we go under there, I think we could get a shower. I think. Don't you think, Emily?
Yeah, definitely. I prefer warmer water.
We got to fix this, John. How come we haven't fixed this yet? I mean, we got to call somebody who's in charge of this, because this thing is spilling water. There's about as much water in that East Trust as there are ballot proposals that are being considered right now. You like that transition. I knew you do, Susan. Don't give me that face. We spent this morning counting up how many ballot proposals are out there with either approved language or is, in the case of PA4, out there with actual signatures. We counted up 10. How many of these are actually going to go? Just for our listeners, the 10 that we have that are out there, PA4, the repeal of PA4. Yeah, the 25% renewable energy portfolio by the year 2025. We have two expansion of casino proposals. The home health care constitutional amendment being pushed by SEIU, the legalization of marijuana, collective bargaining, what we call the anarchy amendment, but is really just a crackdown on the Constitution.
Yeah, I think it kind of smushes some old-timey language from the 1700s into the beginning of Michigan's Constitution.
So. Yeah, that one's not going anywhere, so we'll just take that. We can just take that off the list right now. We're not going to talk about that. We've got the Ambassador Bridge for Nine and the Americans for Prosperity Who Aren't Involved in It proposal to require a two-thirds majority from the legislature for any tax increases or a vote of the people. Emily Lawler, starting with PA4, we've been following this for some time. This is going to be in front of the Court of Appeals to find out if the font size is big enough.
Yeah, I mean, at the Board of State canvassers, they put together a pretty good argument that the font size was big enough. That seemed to be the only thing. There were actually five issues raised by the opposition brief filed by the Sterling Corporation, and that was the only one that the Bureau of Elections said that they could touch. The rest of them, they said, were subjective and things that Board of State canvassers didn't have any control over. But nonetheless, it appears the font size was apparently not big enough, but on a partisan vote. So
2-2, so this is going to the Court of Appeals now and presumably to the Supreme Court after that.
Yeah.
Now, a point was made earlier today that this could also have federal court implications, and that could be the next case. This is going to be a huge setback, though, if this doesn't get on the ballot for those who were trying to suspend PA4, which gives emergency managers more power and, in particular, stop or suspend collective bargaining agreements.
Right. I mean, I think this has been giving a lot of lefties hope across the state. I mean, every time you get another emergency manager in another district or, you know, someone is under financial review, everyone always says, well, not for long, look at our ballot proposal. And if that's not going to be a reality, it's going to be a different story.
I just have to repeat again that this is pure naivete that they didn't take this to the Board of Canvassers to begin with to get it approved as to form. You're talking about a day out of the process. I don't know if it was what the reasoning for it was, but the organizers of this campaign should frankly probably be embarrassed, very embarrassed.
It seems like it's a step in the process just to get language approved by the Board of Canvassers, but
simple thing.
But really, I mean, aren't we nitpicking though? I mean, it's got a 14-point, and that seems like a bit of a.
It's in the law. It's a simple thing to go in front of the board to say, here's our form, and then, you know, you've got it all set and ready to go. You've got the signatures, and you can't get challenged on that kind of stuff, and that's what holds these up.
Okay. Here's a message for all of the liberals who are out there whining on their stupid blogs about this and Rachel Maddow and their conspiracy theories. If you believe that there is a huge conspiracy in this state with Republicans running roughshod over the public, then game plan a little bit and see what they could do to screw with you and do what you can to prevent that, like getting your language approved.
I think you do bring up a good point here, because I think we should have learned from Mark Brewer's constitutional amendment of a couple years ago, which you call the Bedsheet Amendment, which I love because the real name of it, Reform Michigan Government Now, was
with an exclamation.
It was a little clunky. I like the Bedsheet Amendment. But had he been able to get that in front of the canvassers and get it rejected, or, you know, he could have maybe saved a lot of time and definitely would have saved at least $1 million in collecting the signatures. He wouldn't have had the wow, pop, oh my God factor, but at least you would have had something that could have been on the ballot. and possibly could have been approved.
Well, the reason why Mark Brewer didn't do it in the unions is they wanted the element of surprise, and this hadn't been tested before, so they thought they could get away with it. Well, we have case law now, and it was not a surprise to anybody that the emergency manager repeal was being circulated. Everybody knew it. They were talking to the media. So, you know, this was just arrogance or hubris or incompetence or whatever. But, you know, they can whine all they want, but this was an unforced error.
So we've got PA4. That's a big question mark whether that's going to get on the ballot. If it does get shot down, there's nothing going on in the federal courts. Possibility that the people who are circulating the collective bargaining petitions could start a new PA4 repeal?
Well, that's actually included. One of the many things that amendment would do would wipe out the EM law. So it's kind of like you pass one amendment, you get rid of like 80 laws out there. So, you know, it's a good bang for the buck, I guess.
Well, as I'm looking at the 10 constitutional amendments we have up there, it would seem the collective bargaining has the best shot of making the ballot. Anybody disagree with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I agree with that.
What do you think has the best shot of getting on the ballot there, those 10?
Honestly, I think it might be the renewable portfolio standards. I mean, that's a really popular issue with voters. A lot of people don't understand what it takes to go into making renewable energy. You ask Joe Schmo on the street, hey, you want to make the state have more renewable resources? Like, oh, heck yeah. Like, I bring my own grocery bag tomorrow now, you know? It's an eco-friendly move, and they started early.
Yeah, that's a good point. They did.
Yeah, but...
And they've been paying for signatures early, and they've been able to save money that way, because instead of paying $4 for signature now, they paid $1 a few months ago and probably have signatures. Susan, you shook your head. What do you think has the best shot of making the ballot up there?
No, I'm not sure. It could be collective bargaining. I do think the 25 by 25 people have been going for a while. Yeah, I never underestimate the bridge people, because when you've got $1 billion in the bank, you know, you can do pretty much whatever you want. I know they're starting late, but I don't think they're bluffing. So I think they'll probably come through.
Alicia, what do you think has the best shot of making the ballot of those ballot proposals up there?
No, I have to agree with Emily about the 25 by 25. I think it's a really popular issue. I think it's easy for people to digest. And I think collective bargaining will have a lot of support also. But, I mean, if you're trying to explain it to someone on the street, just trying to get a signature, you know, downtown Lansing or wherever you're gathering, it's really about how easily you can sell something.
All of these ballot proposals, I think, with the exception of 25 by 25 and the collective bargaining, in order to get on the ballot, they are going to need some money to pay circulators to get out there. I mean, this is the beginning of May now we're getting into. You got May, you got June, and you got a few days in July, and boom, you're done. And that's a lot of signatures. You're talking about 500,000 signatures. Think about that. In the next 60 days that you got to get, you're not going to get that unless you're paying people to go out there and get signatures for $4 or $5 a pop. But if these interest groups have the money that they're willing to spend, the Ambassador Bridge folks have a good shot of getting their ballot proposal on. They've got some ads out there. They've had ads for about a year. They're in good shape if they got the money to go ahead and do it. I never underestimate the super conservative types, too, for this proposal, for the two-thirds vote in the legislature. We had a few years ago. Remember this, John? We had a few years ago. We had Stop Government Spending or something. There was a group that had the signatures, and they almost got on, but they got bounced because of a technicality.
Yeah, a group out of Colorado, if I remember right, or Colorado tried it first. And
it was the signatures. They had enough, but they had too many duplicates. Too many got scratched. So.
Oh, okay.
Because that would have been like Prop 6 of 06?
Something like that, yeah, okay. So I never underestimate their ability to do that stuff. And then, of course, the casinos, it's, you know, we have two casino proposals out there. It's all about who can spend the most money.
We always have a casino proposal, and it never seems to go on.
I know, and that's why I'm a little dubious on this one. I mean, I want to actually see the circulators out there before I get excited about it.
Well, and it's very nice to say to the press that we've got $50 million for this thing, but nobody's seen hide nor hair.
All right, well, very good. So I guess the bottom line is here, there's two or three here that we think are probably going to make the ballot. There's a potential of six, I think, a realistic potential of six here between PA4, 25 25 by 25, one of the casinos, collective bargaining, the bridge, and the two-thirds. I think the best-case scenario here is that six make the ballot. Yes, we agree on that. Medical marijuana is dead. We haven't seen anything from the home health care people in the SEIU yet. They would have needed to start a long time ago, I think, and I haven't seen them keeping pace with collective bargaining. So, and I think that's and then the other casino one, the one with Billy Sims, has kind of become a bit of a pipe dream joke. So I think we can let that one go too. All right, very good. Fran Brennan, you represent Working America. Tell us what Working America is.
Thank you, Kyle. Working America is the community affiliate of the AFL-CIO. So what we do is we give voice to people who don't have a union on the job. There are people that don't have the benefits of a union, and so we're trying to give them an opportunity to feel that they can participate and be engaged and be heard.
Now, how did you guys get interested in the cyber schools issue?
It was interesting. What we do is we go to neighborhoods and we have conversations with your friends and your neighbors. And through those conversations, we're asking them what their concerns are. In the state of Michigan, there's five dominant concerns, but one of them is education. And then through the education conversation, we started discussing cyber schools. And what we discovered is that it was incredible how nobody knew about cyber schools. Nobody knew about SB 619. And then when we gave them the facts about it, they were extremely disturbed.
Now, how many people would you say you spoke to in the process here in Michigan and reaching out and getting to know folks?
In just 4 weeks, because we've only been doing it for that period of time, we've talked to close to 8,000 people.
Is that right? Now, how many staff people do you got doing all this work?
Well, we have about 6 to 8 organizers that go out in the community, mm-hmm. and then I'm part of the program staff, and we have 2 to 3 program staff. So it's not a huge team. What is big is that we have over 98,000 members in Michigan. Mm. So we're addressing the concerns of the people in Michigan. And that's where it became such an obvious concern and a need to address it. We had our first press event last week, and we've never really done that. And our members came. They came from Grand Rapids and Monroe, Jackson, to Lansing to talk to their representatives and to the press about how concerned they are.
And obviously the next day, the State House passed out a cyber schools expansion bill. Do you feel like that you got maybe a little too late into the process? What do you think you could have done to maybe influence that vote, if anything at all?
Yeah, and that's it's a good question, and I think that what we were most concerned by is that we were talking to representatives, Representative Zorn, Representative Heisey, people, their constituents were calling them and letting them know that they were opposed to cyber schools. And we were really hopeful that this would not pass. We were actually told by both Representative Zorn and Heisey that they would vote against it. So, and especially with Representative Zorn, that morning our members were told that he was voting against it. So we felt we were having an impact, and rightfully so. I mean, if the people in your community are concerned about something, it makes sense that you listen to them. And if there's a lot of them that are voicing a concern, that's, I think, both unusual and spectacular, that you need to consider that. So we were surprised at how the vote went down.
So are you going back into those constituencies in Monroe and Northville in the case of Representative Heisey and telling people that these folks broke their word?
Actually, we are. Specifically with Representative Zorn, because we did have so many conversations with him. And that morning he did say he was voting against it. So we have been back in the district talking to his neighbors and his constituents, and they are making those calls. And I do want to underscore, to have someone make a call to their legislator is really, it's a difficult thing to ask someone to do. It's not something they're comfortable doing. So the fact that so many, and we're talking hundreds, have made calls, I think also underscores how important this issue is to everybody.
Now, some say that Representative Zorn was the tie-breaking vote. He was the last green vote for cyber schools.
I know, and I think that he is trying to figure out the best way to handle this, but I think what he really needs to do is not think about K-12 Incorporated, but rather think about the children in his district and also his communities that he represents, and do what the people in his communities want, which is clearly to vote against SB 619.
Now, the expansion, though, of cyber schools, you could say this is about choice. Now, the advocates would say this was all about giving parents more choice, and if we have a child who's not learning in a traditional environment, this is an option to help him or her learn.
I think it's an interesting way to say that it's about choice. I disagree with that. I think what it really is about privatizing more things in our state. And I don't think the people in our state from our membership want education privatized. What we're witnessing in Lansing lately is the privatization of everything. And there is a different focus. The mission with educators is to educate your children. And the goal is to do whatever they can to make learning interesting and exciting for your child. A goal for a profit-making corporation is to make profits. And I think the very notion that we're trying to suggest that education should also be a profit-making enterprise is a huge concern for the people of Michigan.
Or another way you could look at it, I mean, you guys are a organization that is trying to get together people who don't belong to organized labor, but there is an interest here in that most teachers are unionized. Couldn't the argument be made that you're just trying to step up for a teacher's union here?
I suppose if you wanted to make that argument, but I don't think it's the correct argument to make. We are actually really truly representing people who aren't in a union. So when we knock on doors, we're talking to people who, we're not going by a party affiliation. Our criteria is that you're not in a union. And then we have conversations and develop a relationship. So I think it's easy for people who want to kind of peg us a certain way to say, well, you're just there for the unions, but that's not truly the reality of the situation. And I guess along those lines, though, with regards to unions, it's interesting to me that somehow unions have become this terrible entity when, in fact, when we talk to our friends and neighbors, what is the realization about what unions have brought is safe work environments, freedom from, sexual discrimination or discrimination in general, fair wages, and opportunities. So I'm not sure where that kind of attitude is coming from unless it's coming from a group that is trying to demonize something when the reality is not that way.
Now, I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. Now, the private sector has done a lot of things well. A lot of innovative stuff and ways that we do things have been started because of the private sector. What makes you think the private sector can't do education well?
Well, because along those lines, and I agree with you, the private sector has done some things well, but they've also done some things terribly. We had a complete economic meltdown that was close to a depression because we allowed the private sector to go crazy in the financial arena. There are instances that the private sector has not done well because they haven't had the transparency, the accountability that is needed sometimes, especially when your goal is not necessarily a product as much as it is for profit. Mm-hmm. So that's where you kind of need that other entity that is monitoring things and making sure that things are transparent, that there is accountability. In the educational system right now in Michigan, you have parent-teacher groups, you have school boards. All of these things are in play to collaborate efficiently and in a good way in the community to make the school system work for their community. To privatize it and to make it something that is not accessible as far as getting information seems to be against the very nature of what education's about.
The next step here for this bill is Governor Snyder's desk. He's in support of this kind of stuff. What kind of strategy do you use to try and get him to change his mind?
Well, we're hoping actually that tomorrow they will vote for reconsideration. And then we're hoping that Representative Zorn and other representatives will do the right thing, that they'll have a second chance, which very few people get in life, to do the right thing and to represent their community, their constituents, and their children in their community and vote against this.
What gives you that hope that they may reconsider?
Our understanding is there was a request for reconsideration, and so it is a democratic process.
Right.
I mean, given that it was such a close vote, and by your own statement earlier, Representative Zorn, you know, delayed voting. So you know that it was something that he was really seriously considering. It would seem that this would be one of those really striking examples of when you should reconsider something and let people think about and then reevaluate their positions.
All right. Very good. Fran Brennan from Working America, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to John Rurink, Alicia Green, Emily Waller, Susan Demas, and Fran Brennan for joining us on the podcast. Also, thanks to Lori Makwande for baking the yellow yummy cake for John's birthday on Thursday. For Rita for ordering the tapupu salad from LS Teco. There's still some left in the fridge. John has volunteered to eat it after a weekend. I'm not touching it. I mean, I've got an iron stomach, but I'm not touching that poopoo, John.
It'll be good. It'll be good. You just got to nuke it long enough.
If you say so, that guac is brown, dude.
The salad gets a little mushy after you nuke it, but that's okay.
All right, man. All right. We got to take you to ER. I'm glad St. Lawrence is only like four blocks down. Until next week, I'm Kyle Moyne. Take care.